China and the U.S. are both hurting from the trade war. We'll talk in Beijing and the pain. Live from London, this is the Marketplace Morning Report from the BBC World Service. I'm Anu Anand. Good morning. Today's meetings between U.S. and Chinese deputy trade representatives are the first face-to-face talks since the G20. They're not exactly high level, but there's a lot to work out. Linda Yu, author and economist at Oxford University, explains prospects for these talks.
This meeting is a precursor to a larger meeting. But I think what's important to note is that the Chinese have made proposals because they've got 90 days to come up with an agreement. And the proposals include greater market opening so America could sell more of its goods and services into China to reduce the trade deficit. But I think what's going to be a key sticking point is whether or not the Americans can get a monitoring mechanism with it. In other words, they're very unhappy with the promises that China makes. They think that China makes promises in order to not get additional tariffs imposed, and then they don't follow through on it. But I think that would be quite hard to get.
And not forgetting the economic impact in this ongoing trade dispute.
The biggest indicator is the Chinese government is going to spend 1% of national output on massive tax cuts to help consumers and businesses which are affected. Of course, the Americans are also giving billions away to farmers to try and make up for Chinese retaliatory tariffs. So I think there's a big incentive for both sides to come to the table. Whether they can do it within this 90 days is debatable, but I think there's a great incentive for both sides to come up with a win.
Linda Yu there. Now, amid those talks, Tesla CEO Elon Musk said his company broke ground today on a new factory in Shanghai. It marks the electric car maker's first manufacturing plant outside the U.S. The BBC's Karishma Vaswani reports from Singapore.
In a series of tweets ahead of the groundbreaking, Elon Musk confirmed that Tesla would be making affordable versions of the Tesla Model 3 and the proposed Model Y at its new Chinese plant. The new Gigafactory, as it's called, could reportedly cost around $5 billion. The company already operates two other Gigafactories in Reno, Nevada, and Buffalo, New York, and could look to build a fourth in Europe. The new factory will produce cars for the Greater China region in an attempt to grow Tesla's presence in the world's largest auto market. Mr. Musk bought the land for the factory in October last year. A government report suggests partial production will begin in the second half of this year. The Tesla boss has warned of the impact the U.S.-China trade war is having on his business, saying that Chinese tariffs on U.S.-made vehicles made selling his cars there challenging.
Karishma Vaswani there. Let's do the numbers. Global stocks are steady as those trade talks resume. Britain's FTSE 100 is down slightly as Parliament returns from Christmas break. Members are to begin debating again on a Brexit plan this week with a vote on Prime Minister Theresa May's deal expected next week. Britain may be known globally for its pioneering railways, but as many people go back to work, commuters here are describing a 3% passenger fare hike as the great train robbery. As listeners in big U.S. cities like New York can relate to, last year here was marred by strikes, cancellations and delays.
Our fares are already the highest in Europe. It's a tax on all commuters and people that actually have to use the railway because there's no other way of them getting around.
At the end of the day, it's a public transport, and if the public can't afford it, then what good is a public transport that's unaffordable?
Why are Britain's trains more expensive and less reliable than many European services? The BBC's Jonty Bloom explains its infamously complex system.
The infrastructure is owned by the government, and all the services are provided by a whole plethora of other companies which compete and bid against each other when the franchises come up for renewal.
So that competition should mean, in theory, that there are efficiencies and there should be lower prices for customers. So why are fares constantly going up and passengers complaining that they don't even get a seat sometimes?
Oh, it's quite common in this country not to get a seat. They sell more tickets than there are seats. Part of the problem is basically that although it's privatised, the lines themselves are run as monopolies. So if you're getting a train from London to Manchester, for instance, or from Glasgow to London, there isn't really much competition. There is one line run by one company. Some of those individual companies which run those services are actually subsidised by the government. They don't actually make a profit. So it's an amazingly complicated system. The ticketing system is famously complicated. If you're a commuter or you're a business traveller who has to travel on a set day at a set time, it can be much more expensive than flying.
Yeah, I think everybody in this country's definitely experienced that. There's a big debate about whether Britain's railways should be run just as a business or just as a public service? Now, how does Britain compare to other countries?
If you look at countries like Switzerland, Denmark, Germany and France, they have very reliable trains. They have reasonable costs. In the UK, we have a very good safety record, but we also have had quite a few strikes and attempts to change the timetable, which have been complete failures. Many of those countries that are in the top league do subsidise their railways more than the UK does, but also they spend it differently. The government just invests in infrastructure and lets a company run the railways and doesn't interfere with the actual timetabling. And that seems to be the cleverest way of doing it. And there is the other issue that splitting up the railways has given the unions a lot of power because they only have to call a small number of people out on each line to create chaos. That has meant they have had quite good pay deals. The government blames the increases in ticket prices on that. But if you look at it, wages are not that large a part of the cost of running a railway.
John T. Bloom there. Finally, a Japanese billionaire has become the most retweeted in history, more than 4 million times, probably helped by the fact that the retail mogul promised to share about $1 million between 100 people who shared his tweet. In London, I'm Anu Anand with the Marketplace Morning Report, coming to you live from the BBC World Service.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.